Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
The Federal Open Market Committee's rate decision was announced today, and interest rates remain unchanged. No surprise here. With inflation above the 2% target level for the past 50 months in a row, there is no credible reason to cut rates at all right now, let alone slash them to 1% as the president wants. The market's reaction was profoundly negative. So perhaps there were many investors who thought a rate cut would occur. That's surprising to me. Or at least maybe they were hoping Powell would hint that a rate cut would be imminent. But he didn't hint at that at all. Doesn't know when he's going to cut rates. In any case, the market was due for a pullback, and we're getting one. But significant rate cuts are coming next year. The great reconciliation of asset prices is heading our way. But the start of the calamities has not arrived yet. So let's get to the meat and potatoes of the podcast, and it's called Banana Trees Grow in D.C. The debt spiral in the United States is an accelerating crisis that is threatening our standing as the predominant world power. Surging deficits are being combined with massive rollovers from our existing humongous debt pile. This is compounding into untenable interest payments, which will soon force the Federal Reserve into being a perpetual buyer of treasuries, one that is the purchaser of first and last resort, not just the last resort, of the first position. To appreciate the gravity of the situation, consider the gross national debt stood at less than $6 trillion in the year 2000. It has now surged past $37 trillion by the middle of this year, marking a 520% increase in just 25 years. Worse yet, our debt equals 740% of our annual federal revenue. This guarantees insolvency unless aggressive reforms are undertaken immediately, which is not going to happen. The national debt is projected to exceed $67 trillion in 2035, even under relatively optimistic assumptions about growth and inflation. To put this in context, it took 250 years of American history to accumulate that first $37 trillion. The country is set to add $30 trillion to that $37 trillion pile in just 10 years. It's the fastest debt accumulation in modern history. In fact, all of history. Deficits continue to spiral. For fiscal year 2025, the shortfall already stands at $1.36 trillion. That's a 14% increase over last year. With less than 4 months remaining in the fiscal calendar year, annual deficits now represent 6.4% of GDP, and the CBO projects they will rise to 9% of GDP, or $2.7 trillion by the end of the next decade. According to the Treasury's data, $9.2 trillion of debt is scheduled to mature in this year, calendar year. And that's nearly 31% of GDP. Even if federal spending were to freeze overnight, the government would still need to refinance almost one-third of the economy's output at materially higher interest rates. That is a death spiral in motion. The inertia is there. It's just starting. We're prepared for it. It's just not happening. The market is not ready to collapse now because of this fact, but it will. Interest payments have overtaken defense as the second largest line item in the federal budget. The U.S. now pays $1.11 trillion in annual interest, more than the entire $1.1 trillion spent on national defense. According to Cato, this will rise to $2 trillion per year over the next decade. Now, the debt service should be crowding out the private sector spending and sending borrowing costs spiking higher. But that's where the Fed has stepped in to abrogate the free market. Maniacal money printing has led to unusually high rates of inflation that are still persistent today. And this is happening just as the foreign appetite for Treasury issuance is vanishing. The sad truth is that Washington, D.C. is looking more and more like a banana republic. So a lot of people say, and even Republicans say this, that we could just grow our way out. But even if yearly deficits were eliminated, excluding interest payments, the debt-to-GDP ratio would not decline unless the economy achieved sustainable growth above 3%. But such growth is virtually impossible. Sustainable 3% growth for the following reasons. First, the labor force in the United States is shrinking, and productivity declined by 1.5% in the first quarter. Immigration caps and border closures have reduced labor participation, effectively halving GDP growth. At the same time, inflation has severely eroded the financial stability of the middle class. And this is a popular survey I've been mentioning lately, that 60% of the American population is now holding less than $1,000 in savings. So they're either, you know, basically have 60% of Americans have no net worth or negative net worth. 60%. Consumer credit defaults are on the rise. 10% of FHA loans are currently delinquent, and 9 million borrowers remain delinquent or in default on their student loans. This is not a foundation of a strong economic recovery. This is not a strong middle class. It's a powder keg waiting for a spark. And the spark is coming. Now, there are a few short-term tailwinds to grow, such as the extension of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. And there's a allowance of 100% expensing for capital purchases. That's good. However, these are unlikely to make significant differences because most of the provisions maintain current tax rates, and tariffs are taxes, and they are a large tax increase, $600 billion per year. So whatever good news we're going to get from the TCJA extension is going to be more than offset by the tariffs. So you have anemic growth, relatively stagnant earnings, and all the fiscal multipliers are very weak. The most crucial question remains, who is going to absorb the tsunami of new Treasury issuance? Now, historically, the Federal Reserve has, you know, operated as the buyer of last resort. But for now, it's retreating. Since the start of quantitative tightening in 2022, the Federal Reserve has sold off $2.3 trillion of its balance sheet. It is now in the unusual process of actively shrinking off of its balance sheet, rather than adding to that pile of treasuries. Additionally, foreign central banks, particularly those in China and Japan, can no longer be relied upon as dependable buyers. In Japan, the 40-year government bond rate is now 3.37%. That's offering domestic investors a more competitive return. Furthermore, the imposition of tariffs and asset confiscations and sanctions has injected additional political risk into the market for Treasury securities. Meanwhile, trade flows have collapsed, surpluses are declining, global dollar reserves are thinning, and there's a buyer vacuum. It's only going to widen from here. Now, some argue that the Federal Reserve can easily save the day yet again with another round of debt monetization. I believe they're dead wrong. During the global financial crisis, the Fed printed $4.5 trillion and absorbed toxic mortgages and treasuries. But that liquidity remained mostly on Wall Street. It suppressed yields, inflated asset prices, and it didn't trigger runaway CPI inflation. Fast forward to today, and annual deficits have already surpassed, as I mentioned, $2 trillion, and they're going much higher from there. When the next recession arrives, those deficits are projected to soar even further, potentially reaching somewhere in the $5 trillion per year annual deficits. If, or more accurately stated, when the Fed deploys helicopter money 2.0, the credit flow will flow directly to Main Street instead of swirling around the canyons of Wall Street. Inflation will be ignited like never before. Broader monetary aggregates will explode higher, and benchmark yields could surge. And don't forget, all forms of consumer debt, all sorts of consumer debt, like mortgages, student loans, auto loans, are tied to that 10-year Treasury note. So people that are begging Powell to slash interest rates, well, yeah, he controls short-term rates, but he doesn't control long-term interest rates. And just look what happened last year. He cut rates by 100 basis points, and long-term rates increased. If short-term rates fall, if and when Powell or whomever is in place next year, if it takes that long, in May of 26, the new Fed head cuts rates aggressively, long-term rates rise, then that means the Fed's put is going to fail. The result's going to be a collapse in the housing market, credit markets, and equity prices. I mean, the bond crisis is real, and its triggers are many, including the firing of Powell with a and replacement with a presidential puppet, what I like to call an obsequious sycophant. And of course, the business cycle hasn't been abrogated, hasn't been repealed. So you have to add to that another trigger, which is a recession-induced deficit explosion paired with intractable inflation. The debt death spiral has arrived. Total non-financial U.S. debt is now 257% of GDP, surpassing the global financial crisis peak of 234%. The credit, real estate, and equity bubbles, which I call the triumvirate of false prosperity, are products of 20 years of negative real interest rates. That era is ending. The tremors are already visible. Dollars weakening, yields are rising, credit markets are on the precipice. When the bond market enters panic mode and liquidity dries up, it will serve as the catalyst that bursts the real estate bubble, the business credit bubble, and the equity market bubbles, all in tandem. Traditional portfolio models such as the 60-40 blend of long-duration bonds and passive equity exposure will crumble, disintegrate under the weight of rate volatility and earnings compression. Alternatively, investors may be far better off owning the short end of the yield curve right now while actively trading the equity portion according to the second derivative of inflation and growth. I mean, it is okay to ride these bubbles while they last. That's what we're doing. But you better have a method, a strategy, an algorithm, a model to identify when the great and unbelievable and unprecedented reconciliation of asset prices has begun before your retirement plans get delayed for a very long time, perhaps even decades, maybe even derailed entirely. The inflation deflation economic cycles model's output indicates that there is still some room left to the upside, but it is very limited and specific. We own India, we own Australia, we own US defense, we own certain parts of technology, and of course we own some precious metals. Treasuries make sense, but you must be on the short end of the yield curve. I'll end with this thought. Most investors now, the vast majority of them, display a maximum condition of complacency. And that is when we at Pento Portfolio Strategies remain the most alert.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.